mic check. I'm making a mic check. And if you're making some love and do the mic check.
This is going to be horrible.
There it is. So, all right, you guys ready? We're...
How loud do I need those effects if they're Jake's Orison is fully
Rutabaga, Rutabaga, Rutabaga.
I have different techniques.
Which Jake's fart technique here?
What's this?
It was interesting.
What is that?
Just a different.
Weird. Guys, there's all kinds of farts.
That's a strictly lower lip fart. That was impressive.
I want you all to see it in profile, though. Can you please turn to the side and show them? Because it's... I was trying to figure out how to make an elephant noise for my kid the other day, which I thought was like... But it's harder. Yeah, that's hard to do.
Wow.
Do it again.
Do you play a yeah? Hey, so did I.
But I also play French horn, and I can't do that.
How good were you at the French horn?
Well, only,
what is this podcast?
I took it for a year and a half until a beetle came up through my French horn onto my lips, and then I never.
This is an industrious beetle.
That is such a Rita
problem. And then I never touched it again after that.
Hi, I'm Philip. Hi,
I'm Matt.
First, we'll have a little chat,
then put on our ring rubber.
Now it's time for next at bat.
And we're here today with the mess. Hi, the mess.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. You guys want to introduce yourselves real quick?
Hi, I'm James Roan of The Mess.
I'm Eric Noble of The Mess.
I'm Mike Fotis of The Mess also.
I am Joe Bozick of The Mess.
I am Rita Borsma, also of The Mess.
I am Jake Scott of The Mess.
Wow. And Michael Ritchie's not here.
And Michael
his ghost
Ritchie.
Is here.
Who's of The Mess?
He's of the Science Museum, I think.
Right. Yeah, something. He's working today.
And as always, I am joined today by...
Philip Simondet of Next at Bat. And your host, as always...
is Matthew McLeod of Next at Bat. Great. Well, thank you for being here today. It's hard to get everybody in one room. I know that. So... thanks for being here. So currently you guys are doing Saturday nights at 9:30 over at Huge Theater. And just for anybody who doesn't know what your form is.
Which would be us.
Yeah. And so that's partially why I want to ask the question. Could you explain what it is you guys do?
Eric, you want to take this?
Yeah, Eric. I'm going to have Eric Noble take this.
I think... We don't. Yeah, the definition has kind of been in flux. That's why we. That's why everybody's pretty hesitant. I think we joined when we assembled. The idea, just the initial sort of idea, was what would happen if there were this many of us. At the time, there were 8 of us, and what if all of us were just in all the scenes almost all of the time? Like how does that? How does that work? And ever since that sort of initial sort of challenge, we've kind of been refining it and honing it and stuff like that. So while that was the initial idea of the group, it's certainly not all we do now. And so I think we're sort of like a little bit at a time saying like, oh, this doesn't work, you know, either for a good reason or not, or hey, I think we can make that work better. And we're just it's an evolving thing all the time, which is kind of a that's almost a like lazy improv. We don't have a form. We just do whatever. But we definitely give it a lot of thought, and we definitely are always trying every week to figure out a new way. And given the sort of years behind the members of the group. There's a lot of ideas, and there's a lot we're anxious to try, sort of throw them in the mix, and hey, let's try this, let's try that, and yeah, we're just trying to keep evolving.
Well,
how was that, guys?
You didn't tell them about the choreography we now include into
ours. We do have an opening that's, we usually do a choreographed opening to an awesome song. We did Rent, that 4 billion, 45 zillion song. Seasons of Love
is what it's called.
And then we did a cut from Newsies.
That was maybe
did we do a Tracy Chapman?
Tracy Chapman, Fast Car.
And then we recently just did a bunch of dogs barking, jingle bells.
That would be it.
We've got something to do before tonight.
Well, I think Michael Ritchie has suggested some late 90s hip-hop cuts.
Is there other ideas?
He's not going to be in the
show. I still wanted Lou Bega as Mambo number 5.
I do, too. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, that's a good
one. It has my name in it.
Or something by Color Me Bad.
I want to sex
you up. Mike's face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What is there besides I Want to Sex You Up? Is there another?
I'm so glad you're my girl. I'd do anything.
Oh, is that them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a better song.
Did they come out with a whole album?
I think so, yeah.
Just two stuff. Anyway,
yeah.
Sorry,
we've been getting that a lot.
Sorry, we're all just thinking with Clever Bad.
I think part of it is like we all have an ideal of what the group might be, even if we can't define it. And what's sort of interesting is matching that up with who we are as improvisers and how we work together as a group. So it's been pretty fun for me. I mean, it's been frustrating at times, but what I like about it is if it does feel like we're reaching that. That is at the axis point where what we're aiming for and who we kind of are about to cross. And I think that is a really interesting and fun way to form a group. And I appreciate that the experience level that is part of the mess, we were willing to sort of throw a bunch of balls in the air and let some fall. Mm-hmm. And we're willing to, because I think in the end, we're going to be happy with what the end result is. Even if sometimes sets don't necessarily feel like they've hit exactly what we were aiming for, I actually think it's a really good thing that we're taking the lumps along with the really fun scenes that end up happening. So.
Well, and I think that, you know, it's a different approach to constantly tinker, you know, with something instead of like, this happened, I didn't love it, let's just keep doing that and hope that eventually I'll love it. And so this is a new approach, but this is the question I've wanted to ask you guys for a while. Like, what would it take to have a set that each one of you is happy with?
James just growled.
Yeah. I don't think that's possible because I think all of us are sort of striving to keep improving and keep challenging ourselves in different ways.
Uh-huh.
So usually what ends up happening is that we have a set and then there's one scene that kind of stands out as, something very different happened in that scene. What was it? Let's try and capture that. Let's try and do some more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time when we're sort of focused on that, something else that'll be sort of unexpected will happen, and then we'll kind of keep chasing the dragon. Is that the thing? Chase the dragon?
It is. Yeah. Now.
Chase the dragon.
Sounds like a corporate thing.
It is.
Yeah.
We're going to synergize.
Or like heroin.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Corporate heroin.
Yeah. But that's my response to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear you guys talk about that because I...
Let's get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've been meaning to say... No. Not at all. But it's interesting to hear that because I think that, you know, last time actually we were in this room, Jake and I, when we were doing the podcast, we talked about, you know, sort of being all right with when something doesn't meet your expectations. And I've just been reminded so much this past year of how not all right with that I am. Not just in terms of improv, just in general. And the mess is that too. I mean, I feel like because we all do have high expectations for the group, I was thinking maybe specific expectations, but I don't know if that's true. We just want it to be good. We really want it to be good. And so, I feel like it's helpful to hear Mike reframe it as sort of like, you know, it's a positive thing that we're making these moves that are risky so that way we can play with the structure. Because I think sometimes I come off stage and I'm like, why wasn't it perfect? You know, and so, yeah.
It's interesting, too. I think the thing that shocked me the most about kind of when we started doing shows was, again, when you kind of look at the experience, as we keep saying, but when you look at the sort of bench strength of the group, you kind of think I think that's why we do have such high, you know, expectations and hold ourselves to a pretty high standard of what we should be doing. However, what was interesting was seeing that we have very, very different ways as individuals of attacking improv. Mm-hmm. And therefore, like, if a problem came up, we'd all attack it differently. And sometimes that made, you know, even more more trouble.
Working cross purposes, sort of.
In a way, and yeah. Just yeah, and so a lot of the time, the first few months was us getting to know each other better, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and kind of, you know, the necessary things, but it just showed me, at least personally, that it's, you know, just like the experience alone, you still gotta know where everybody's coming from, and or at least it helps if you're gonna keep trying new things and stuff like that. So it's been challenging, and it's been really fun, and yeah, there's been highs and lows, and Joe's right, probably, though, I don't know if all of us would. I think all of us have walked off stage and been like laughing about, mm-hmm. like, oh, that was a blast. But I don't know if then, like, when we sit down, we're like, all right, who was satisfied 100% with that? If we'd all raise our hands, I don't know if that would ever happen.
Remember, especially in the beginning, because I was so used to doing two-man shows with James, and you guys probably might have experienced the same thing, because you got Ferrari and Expedia, and you got Splendid Things, and
I'm just a girl.
No doubt about it. But like, when you're on stage with eight people, there would be a show where it's like, I didn't really have to do anything. I just kind of played a guy painting a fence in the background, you know? And so you'd be like, I didn't feel like I contributed at all. And it's gotten way different now, but I don't know, getting used to that switch of playing with a humongous squad of people on stage all the time was a big difference.
It was really surprisingly counterintuitive, because I thought, well, I've played in big shows where there's a huge cast, and I just thought that's what it is. But with the intention of everybody being on stage all the time, like, my improv brain just doesn't work that way. And so I know those first few shows, we would all, I guess I just speak for me, but I feel like it happened a lot. Like, I would laugh through the entire show, which is not something I enjoy doing, breaking on stage. Like, I don't like it when it happens often, and I couldn't help myself, and I realized it's because I don't ever get to be off the stage and watch. Like, I have to be in it all the time, so every time somebody would say something that surprised me, or what, I would have no space to, like, be able to turn my head or anything. Like, it was so surprising, every move, and you never had a moment to catch up with it, because you can never step out of the scene. So it's been a really fun improv muscle to build that I didn't realize I didn't have until it was the intention of every scene.
There's something also about just about having all the people on stage, because I'm thinking about why it is that I'm also more likely to break in the mess than anything else that I do. I think it's a really funny show. I also think that there's just something about having that many people on stage at the mm-hmm. same time that makes it feel like, I don't know, it's almost like you feel like you're just sort of having a dorky party or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Or, like, it has a slumber party feel to it. That's what I'm trying not to say. But that's what it feels like sometimes, because I watch some of my fifth graders sometimes, and if I put certain people together at a table, I know they're just going to laugh hysterically the whole time. Mm-hmm. And if I come over and I'm like, what's the joke? What are you guys laughing about? There's no way to recount that. And there mm-hmm. are times when it feels like that on stage for me. I don't know.
Our very first scene was a dorky party, so I feel like that says something about us.
I feel like I break sometimes. Well, I break a lot, and I really try not to, believe it or not. But like, when I do in the mess, it to me, it's this weird sort of camaraderie feeling of, mm-hmm. look at us doing this thing that's really, really hard, and somebody just offered up the weirdest thing. And when I feel like it's really clicking, and when I kind of lose it, is when everybody's sort of like, I'm going to embrace that 100%. And then sometimes it feels like there's seven of us who are going at this 100%, and then sometimes it feels like we're being stared at by 90 people who are like, what? Yeah, but I kind of love that, because it doesn't stop us from making those choices. And I mean that as a compliment to us, because mm-hmm. I think that that's where we're aiming, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Did someone report, like, someone overheard an audience member last week just say, after some ridiculous thing had gone on for a long time, just like, good grief.
I think it was the Hitler scene.
Yeah, it was
because Hitler kept being named, like, Hitler, people were saying that's Hitler, and, like, I think he got tired of hearing the word Hitler.
Yeah, and I don't mean to imply that I enjoy it when I feel like we're alienating the audience, because I don't think we're trying to do that. It's just like, I start to laugh and step out of it a little bit when I do feel like, well, look at the 7 or 8 of us going. You know what I mean? And like, well, here we fucking go.
The other thing that's coming to my mind is what I thought Jim was going to say is it feels like when there's that many people and that many strong improvisers, it does feel like there's a lot of high stakes maybe, but it's just like, it's almost like everything's an important moment that's going to get supported and made a reality in some huge way. And if that thing is a fart joke, it's
a wang joke, a penis joke.
It's something. When it just becomes about that, it makes the high stakes of the dumbest thing possible so ridiculously funny. We just really have to make sure that the audience thinks so too.
Yes.
But it cracks us up. At least for me, it cracks me up first because it's just, yeah, it's given such weight, no matter how stupid.
I don't know if I'm speaking for the group here, but it feels like there's a high incidence in the group of finding it really funny to say a ridiculous thing like, you mean your penis is caught on fire? Like, in a deadly serious booming voice? It feels like it happens at least once a show where Michael Ritchie from some corner of the stage will be like, do you mean to say your penis is caught on fire? Like, it just feels like...
Oh, my neck.
Rita hurt her neck earlier today.
I do love it, though, where we're raising the stakes in that way and we're playing it as seriously as we possibly can, even if, you know, we break or whatever. Like, I do love that. It's something I really like about this group.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of things I was thinking about while you guys were
Should we talk less?
No.
So many of us.
No, that's awesome. I have this thing that, you know, I've been performing for about 20 years as a straight theater actor. And there's about a 5-second window where the performer's in front of the audience, that processing time. And there's 7 of you, and you're all very quick and very experienced. And do you think that by, you know, working together and constantly supporting and, you know, you're constantly moving, that you guys are able to, like, take advantage of that 5-second delay to always stay in front of the audience in a way that a lot of groups can't? That you're able to I'm trying to think of exactly what I'm trying to say here, to constantly surprise and left turn them in ways that, you know, a lot of groups aren't able to do because you have so many people working together.
I think when we followed Family Dinner, we constantly caught our audience off guard every week.
Yeah.
And not always to their pleasure, I think.
But we imagine that a lot too.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
I was done.
Okay. To James.
Anyway, so what
I don't know. Like, I think sometimes what we're doing is a lot for the audience to absorb, and for me personally, I've had to like readjust the expectation of like in Ferrari. I think it's safe to say that. You kind of set up a rhythm of laughter, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. With the audience, and there's a little bit more of a contract with like, okay, we're doing the scene, and here's a laugh, hopefully, right? But then sometimes with the mess, I feel like it's a little bit different. Like, people are enjoying it, but they're just also sort of watching and trying to process a lot of stuff that's happening. Mm-hmm. And personally, for me, I've had to like readjust that, like the idea of like, is this successful while I'm on stage? Because even if you're trying to be outside of it, I am constantly like, all right, how are they reacting to this? How are they reacting to it? And I think it's a little bit different with the mess sometimes, where it's not always going to be like riotous, like laughter. It's going to be like, that was cool. It was also a lot for my brain to process. And mm-hmm. now we've moved on to the next scene. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
My sister-in-law came to see a show, and it's going to sound shitty when I quote this, and I don't mean it in a terrible way, but she was like,
you guys are awful.
No. She was like, I had to hold my breath from laughing because I didn't want to miss anything. So, which sounds like, oh, we're so hilarious. She had to laugh so much, but I didn't, that's what I don't mean. But she's like, I'd actually stop myself from laughing because she's like, it was happening so fast that I would just keep trying to pay attention, which I thought was really interesting because, yeah, to what James and both Mike said, I think sometimes we walk up, we're like, fucking audience didn't get us, man. Like, I really think they were trying so hard to get us that it was just like...
It's a different approach, too. I think the thing we realized right away when it was like, let's all try to be out there as much as possible, as soon as possible, was that if you're to build a normal improv scene, it's you're going to build it, sort of like building blocks and stuff like that. The mess, the getting everyone out there, it's a hog pile. So it's not even really that we're, you know, five steps ahead of the audience. It's more just like we're all out there, then we're refining it and figuring it out. And it's a weird thing to say, like, I don't know that we're ahead of anybody. It's more just like, I think we're refining it quicker. Mm-hmm. And it's like, can they keep up with what we're discovering out of it? And the funny thing is we still haven't figured out if this is a viable way to do it. Sure. You know, we're still like, is this working? Are we still, you know, it's tricky. If we were building it, I think we'd have a better gauge of how the audience was coming along with us. Mm-hmm. But I do think we assault them immediately and then like, all right, we're all in this together, right? So.
Well, that's kind of the big thing for us though, is we kind of have two goals. One is to say yes to every single thing that happens, to accept everything that happens, use that to move forward. And then the other thing is to have everyone in the mess constantly adding and constantly giving gifts. So it's easy to seem like we're way far ahead of everybody, or we're staying five steps ahead, when the simple matter of the fact is we're all running at full pace and we're all saying yes and kind of pushing each other, that we're usually, you know, five steps ahead of each other, and sort of reacting differently to everything that happens. So there's just so much that's going on.
And I wonder, is this true for you guys? Because I've been thinking about this a lot, where it's like, I'm trying to get better at this, and I'm trying to focus on, let's just do a scene that happens to be a group scene, and getting out of the mentality of, let's do a scene that belongs in the mess, or let's do a mess type scene, since we don't even know what that is necessarily. But I do find myself in that sometimes, as opposed to being completely in the moment. I'm thinking, is this what we're aiming to do? And then the other part of my brain's like, we haven't necessarily even established what we're aiming to do. I don't know, that's something that goes through my head a lot. I think maybe even during that 5 seconds, first 30 seconds of the scene, and I try really hard not to be in that mindset, but it does creep in sometimes for me.
I guess I would counter by saying, I think we do know what a mess scene is. I'm not saying like precisely, but I think that the range of premises that we know to sort of burn or warm up with shows us what kinds of things we consider mess scenes to be. Like, and it's not just like in our warm up, sometimes we will intentionally sort of, we're going to try and do a really great emotionally grounded NASA scene. We're going to try and do a really great emotionally grounded interrogation scene. And so those are topics that we come back to a lot. Those are sort of scene structures we come back to a lot. I guess premises we come back to a lot, but that's also a kind of scene. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I do feel like I have a sense of what a mess scene is. And there are times when I intentionally will push against that too. I'll sort of be like, I don't want to do that kind of scene again. We've already done that kind of scene a couple times tonight. Or I remember that one from last week. I really want to do something new. And so I'll intentionally kick something off course. And there are times when I can feel the chaos of that move.
Yeah. what you just said, kicking it off course, one of the biggest things we've discovered is with this many people constantly, you know, giving gifts, making choices and everything, it's like, it's not like, oh, this scene is headed this way, time to turn around. It's like, this boat takes forever to turn, you know? And a lot of times you're not, you know, you can get lost in that. And I think what Mike was just saying, there's a lot of times we talk about like how in our heads we are, simply because to execute the most simple change, if one person's on top of it, unless it's like just a sweep edit or something very undeniable, it can get lost really quickly. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to be super persistent on like making that change, you know, so you get like, all right, wait, are we doing this or aren't we doing, I'm going to own this change and make
one
sure
one person
it happens.
Yelling in the corner, like, yeah. You guys, let's go to the clubhouse.
Exactly. Or hey, that penis is on fire.
Yeah, you know, that, do you mean to say
that is what I'm saying, like, but I think too to what you're saying about premises, James, mm-hmm. like there's also like one of my favorite scenes that we've ever done that we don't really hit this type of premise or attack anymore is we kind of did a mono scene, one of the very first sets that we ever did. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily really mess-like, but I want myself personally to be comfortable enough to let that scene happen right. as opposed to trying to figure out how do I make this like the mess-like. Yeah. That's what's going through my head all the time. And I'm not saying that's right. I don't think that is right, but I'm saying I want to get to the point where I'm comfortable enough to just let that scene happen as opposed to putting it through a filter of, well, this is the mess, so what should happen?
So we need to change it now because this isn't the way it's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm. And I have that battle going through my head sometimes, mm-hmm. and that's just the thing I have to...
I saw the first performance of you guys, and it was the mono scene, the party. Mm-hmm. And it was, that was one of the funniest sets I think I've ever seen.
Yay. Yay. James, you weren't there, right?
Nope, I was not.
It was
feel good about that.
What's weird about that though is it was a real James type of scene. Like no, I'm serious. It was really grounded. Yeah. It was really
you would have really loved
really
it.
Relationship based. Like
and we did have a picture of you hanging out.
In my memory, James played every part. Yeah. but
curse of the mess.
But what was I going to say after that?
More praise for us.
Yeah.
That would be great if we get a little bit more praise.
Anything about Eric?
Well, I think at that time, the only, from what I had talked to you guys about, the only rule you had was that only one person could leave the stage at any given time. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was,
they had to
yeah.
come right back.
Yep.
Because Eric kept leaving to get something.
Orange Julius.
Because you had a disease.
And then
diabetes.
And then Joe would leave to go get bags of of insulin.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, you have shifted considerably since then.
I think the everybody on stage thing was like it was just not as fun. Fun's not the right word, but it just didn't allow for. I think for all we're saying, like a common thing, just to say it out loud, is I think when we walk off stage and we feel slightly dissatisfied at times, the biggest thing that one or all is feeling is a lack of variety. Mm-hmm. Because it's such a big group, we tend to get in like a rhythm, but to wipe a scene or change a scene and then have a completely different rhythm with this many people proves very difficult. So to suddenly break into like Mike saying I want to do a mono scene, it's like I don't think anybody in the group would have a problem with that. Trying to wedge that in the middle of something where we're fast cutting when we're all on a roll with that is really difficult, and I think that's kind of the where we find ourselves. But what I was initially saying was just that, so with everybody on stage right away, only one person can leave, we just realized that the restrictions of that, although it was just a good challenge, it was like, no, we want to do better improv than just this.
Too artificial of a challenge?
Well, it's just like, oh, okay, that's what that feels like, and okay. It doesn't necessarily work for X, Y, and Z. We need to open it up a little bit.
Sure.
You know, so I think now it's like, it's a loose rule where it's like, we should all be out there if we can, mm-hmm. but not at the expense of like, of the moment.
Cool.
It felt to me like that was a really useful starting point because it helped us to define what has become kind of our aesthetic. I mean, I feel like one of the things that is true about me as an improviser in the mess is that I'm far more comfortable with absurdity in that than I am anything else that I do. And it feels like a gleeful, aggressive absurdity. You know what I mean? And that feels like what we kind of... When I think about a mess scene, that's where I start thinking. You know what I mean? Is that feeling of like, yeah, are we embracing every offer? Are the offers often really strange? And I think that sometimes the reasons why the offers are so strange, the premises are so odd, is because we do try to get them out at the top. So that way everybody has a thing to join. And then when you're not allowing yourself to sort of like organically discover like, oh, the angle of his knee implies we've known each other for 13 years. You know, if you're not doing that kind of discovery, instead you're just sort of like, you're just going like, Eskimo parade.
I feel like we're planning our set for tonight. I can't get any of this out of my head.
I'm just going to start reading more into knee position.
Yeah, I know. Never I'm already nervous about how to sit it,
just drop that in
the
off
preview
book.
Of the workshop I'll be leading in April.
Knee position with James Rohn.
I think what everybody's saying is kind of like my dream. Thank you for being with the Michaels. It's kind of like my dream for the group is when we're able to find that balance a little bit. So the Eskimo parade happens, and then we are able to, like, move into a different scene with a different type of feel. Because I think I agree with what everybody's saying, but I also feel like a mess scene can be different than some of the premises that we offer up. And I think once we start getting as comfortable with that as we are with the sort of absurd, weird worlds that we create, which, by the way, that I love, then I'm going to really start feeling like, at least in my mind, we're approaching what I think this group can be. And it's sort of what Eric's talking about, that ability as a group to sort of figure out like, oh, this scene just has a different tone and feel. So let's just pay attention to that. You know what I mean? And that's just sort of my long-term goal for everything. So.
All right. So this is a new segment that doesn't have a name yet. So hopefully you guys can help out with the name. I'm just going to ask.
Great with names.
Is it a quiz of any kind?
Well, kind of, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Call it Wang Patrol.
Wang Patrol? Yeah. So I'm just going to ask some quick improv, basic improv-related questions, and get quick answers from each of you guys.
All right. Yes, and...
What? that was the right answer.
Always.
All right, so if you could improvise with anybody from history, who would it be?
Jesus.
Jesus?
Oh, no.
That's Eric's answer.
No. Anyone from history... Man,
in a duo, only.
I'll just say Scott Atzit, because when I saw him perform when I was in high school, I thought that was pretty amazing. And he's not really from like broad history. Okay.
No, that's perfect.
History is all time.
I was gonna say Harriet Tubman, but I think that's just because I like this saying that name. I don't. There's nothing. God.
We just crossed a line.
I know. Well, that's what I mean. You said a person from history, and that's amazing. The only name.
I'm really
name.
Excited about Boersma and Tubman upcoming week.
I'll think of a real answer, but isn't that terrible that when you say the word history, that's the name that comes into
it. It's not terrible.
Well, then now I guess I'm Rosa Parks.
I've influenced everyone.
Some reason
I have
that bear from AI stuck in my head. Like, that'd be a really fun show, right?
What are you talking about?
The Teddy from AI, the movie AI.
I thought
nope.
You meant Teddy from nope. Ted, the movie.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'm torn between who would be a super fun improviser as opposed to who would just be a very fun person to be around. But I think Teddy Roosevelt answers both of those questions.
I was just like, Roosevelt, right?
Yeah.
Roosevelt seems like
a good one.
Yeah. I think he'd be a steamroller.
I do, too. So? Yeah. I would suggest improvising with William Howard Taft.
Roosevelt did say speak softly.
Napoleon would be a good straight man. He'd be like upset and you could just...
Always make it worse for him.
Probably Cesar Chavez.
The cast. Because
of that movie
company.
That's coming out.
Yeah.
The cast of Three's Company.
Yeah. Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, right, yeah, you should pick actors. That makes sense, right? Doesn't it?
I choose Gene Hackman for sure.
Because
he would he probably hates improv, and he would just the whole time be like, what? Huh? No, you
That's
don't.
What Napoleon would do. I'd want to see them do a duo.
That's a really hard
one. Are you sticking with Tubman?
Well, no, because I'll forever hate myself.
I'm
going
to stick with my answer of Teddy from AI.
Your answer was Jesus first.
Fine.
Jesus.
I can't think of a serious answer. I can't do it.
It's really hard.
I can't do it.
Because Joe's right. Yeah, it's like who would be a good improviser versus who would be amazing to spend a set on stage with.
Socrates would just do teaching scenes.
And too many questions.
Yeah. Yeah,
questions. Like Peter Sellers would be.
Peter Sellers thing, girl.
What? He's good. He's good.
I just wanted to be the one person in history like Peter Sellers.
Wait, Jake hasn't said much for a while, you
That's
guys.
That's true. He's trying to think of which musical.
Yeah, the cast.
Oh, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I think Paul F. Tompkins has proven what that would be.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want me to come back to you? Rita.
Oh.
I thought she said Tubman.
If I have to stick with Jesus, you have to stick with Harriet Tubman. Yeah.
All right, sticking with Tubman? Okay.
Well, I was going to say Douglas Adams, but I don't know nothing if he could actually do an improv set. I just would really like to talk to him about
it. Exactly.
Yeah, right?
It's really hard to be like...
If the rule was you can't hang out with them after the show.
I would like a 45-minute set with Douglas Adams.
I mean, because I want to talk to Paul McCartney so badly, but I don't want to do an improv set with him because I bet it would be terrible. He'd constantly be mugging, he's such a crowd pleaser. I just feel like he would always, it'd be really irritating, but I would just love to talk to him.
Ringo would be more fun to improvise with. He was... great on Shining Time Station.
He was great, and he narrated The Point also.
So if you guys could layer any classical form into The Mess, what classical
form?
Yeah, what classical improv form would you want to layer in?
I would, a deconstruction. I would like to do that.
Let's do a Harold. I think we could do a good Harold.
Montage.
The old classic montage.
Just forward reverse.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, they're all going to hate me when the girl says that.
What girl?
That's not how this group works.
Time. I know.
Yeah, my brain went to deconstruction too, just because it would be the hardest thing to do. And it, like, in a way.
Yeah, but
and the most interesting.
But once we figured it out, I feel like it would be really.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun to do a close quarters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a show where you guys almost did a far quarters, but like you had the scenes kind of tell the story, or the Egyptian archaeologist.
Oh, yeah. I think that was the first one I was in. Nobody really remembers it.
I do remember. I mean, I remember it in broad strokes, and you're right, that it was kind of like that. We kept coming back to.
Yeah.
Rita, do you want to change your girl answer?
No, I just like that James and I shared the same awesome joke.
Now picture you and Harriet Tubman doing a forward reverse.
That'd be great.
The frame of reference would be so different. There's just no way you can possibly.
I know.
All right. For each of you, what is the single, like, what do you consider to be the best scene for you that The Mess has done so far?
Oh, I'm going to jump in early. My favorite is the surprise birthday party.
Oh, that's my answer.
Yeah, there was a scene where Michael played the part of,
he was a very old man.
He was a very old man, and we had all planned a surprise party for him. And then for some reason, I can't remember why now, we just never would...
We thought it would kill him.
Yes, we were worried that we were going to...
The surprise would kill him.
And so we just silently hid in his apartment, and he kept on exiting and re-entering. And we were all so considerate of him, and it was just so fun evading him. And I don't remember all the details.
Mike laid
now,
on the front row.
Yeah, we were all laying out.
Well, yeah, was it said that Michael Ritchie was blind?
Yeah.
So we were, so every time he was escorted in, we would all kind of hide throughout and try to just, like, move chairs so he wouldn't fall. And
I think some of us were chairs for him.
Yeah.
And wasn't it supposed to be like the first birthday without like his wife or friend or buddy? There was like a layer of sad.
It was great. I really loved that scene. It was long and it really worked.
That's for sure my favorite scene that you've done too.
That might be the only scene we've ever done. I can't. Yeah. Everything else.
I know. That came to my mind that's definitely in the top five. And then everything else I'm blanking on right now.
Because there was one.
Go ahead.
There was one a couple of weeks ago that was a ton of fun to do. And
Gene Hackman a couple of weeks
ago. Gene Hackman! Because
I had been fired from a job and you guys all came to the movie theater. And because that's what I was doing to get through it.
You were watching The Firm?
I was watching The Firm. Because I had been let go from The Firm. Yeah. And then I know when you guys, I made you name Gene Hackman movies, and then you named Jaws, and then I hung myself, and then Eric hung. Like, it was just, it was one of the greatest where we talk about, like, everybody jump on board and agree immediately, because sometimes we get stuck in not doing that, and that was just one of the, like, yes, we all did that, and we did it so fast, and it was
really fun.
Sorry, go ahead, Joe.
The Wang Patrol.
It was also, the Wang Patrol seems to be sort of an important
oldie, but
scene.
Yeah.
An oldie, but a goodie.
And I can't remember too much. There was a gang that was the Wang Patrol, if I remember correctly.
No, I remember. This was one of my favorites because I was. It was one of those, like, police detectives. I was the police sergeant, you guys were all detectives, and we were trying to solve Wang murders.
Yeah.
So we had the big Wang map.
Yeah.
You guys were the Wang Patrol. Turned out one of the Wang murderer was in our midst.
That's
and
always how it
we
happens.
We plotted out where each one of the murders happened
and
on the map.
Formed a Wang.
And it was a Wang.
And yeah, that I like that one.
It was one of the
lot.
Smartest, stupidest scenes that I've ever been a part of.
Well, it was one of the. It's like we were talking about. It was like we gave it our all, but it was about dicks.
We did Easter on Death Row a couple of weeks ago, and I really liked that. That was a fun one.
Yeah, that's good.
There was one too. When Mike would talk about when we were working on finding the games of scenes better and really leaning into those, it was a while ago, but I know there was. It might have also had a surprise party premise. I can't quite remember, but I know
it's a good way to fit a lot of people into a scene.
I think it was a surprise party for me, but I had just come from prison. It was like my welcome back from prison, and every new thing that happened was somehow really upsetting to me from some prison memory. So we would always quick cut to whatever happened in prison.
Yeah, that's right. That was a really fun scene.
Was that the one where James put his face in the cake?
At my party, that's where you're putting. But it
James's mayor character might be one of my favorites.
But it was one of those where
most annoyingly dumb character.
Yeah, it got all of those things that we always want to do. Like, it had some really nice emotional grounding. We hit the game super hard, and then there was like some absurdity, like the mayor cake face, and I remember that being a super fun scene to do.
There was another one where James played Richard Belzer.
That was one where he was
reading the audiobook for The Da Vinci Code, and I played Dan Brown. You guys kept making me feel bad about myself. That was really funny. I love that scene.
We are at recording studios a lot.
Man. I like a good. We all have to sing at the same time together. God, that's when I lose it right away. When I'm like, we should sing it now. Like, I'll just start laughing. I can't.
I have to look straight ahead because if anybody's like, has a real serious I'm about to sing face.
And James Rohn, definitely him. Yeah, it is annoying having James and Michael in the group because they're the two most like earnest actorly improvisers in the Twin Cities, and they're just like, they're going full tilt and you're just talking about penises on fire. It's really hard to.
And all of those were the right answers.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yes,
and now is the time in the show where I throw the microphone over to Philip Simondet for a brand new segment that we call Philip's Corner. It's Philip's Corner!
Wang.
Okay.
Let the dogs out!
Ow, my neck!
If you're going to keep any of those, please keep ow my neck. So it just sounds like Philip is abusing women.
Philip's going, ow my neck!
Oh, no.
It was so perfectly timed. It all happened in like a half second.
Ow my neck!
Welcome to Philip's Corner, the zany morning show of Next Up Bat.
So sorry.
I'm sorry.
Get it together, Mass.
Usually we hate bits, so this is weird.
So if you don't know what Philip's Corner is, this is where, if you haven't noticed, I've hardly said anything in the last half hour. And so this is the way that we force me to talk. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stare at you each individually.
Awkwardly. Oh, wow, Jake, he's starting with you.
I'm going to stare at you awkwardly, and then I'm going to form a question. Then I'm going to ask you that question.
Okay.
And then you're going to answer awesomely. Jake.
Philip.
Were you into bugs as a kid?
I was not into bugs. I don't really care for bugs, but I love reptiles and amphibians, and that's what I was into.
Like, explain how...
Like, when I was a kid with them. 9 years old, I saved money in a jar so I could buy a lizard. We caught a lot of frogs and a lot of turtles. I finally saved enough to buy those lizards. Then I got another lizard for my birthday, and it lived 19 years.
Holy shit.
Whoa. What was its name?
Art Gecko.
I'm sorry, Phil. I didn't mean it. Art Gecko.
And so not only were you a lizard kid, you're a lizard kid who thought of names like Art Gecko.
Oh my God.
I think my mom had a hand in that name. I didn't get it.
Trust me, our architect friends are going to love it.
Yeah, so that's what I was into. And dogs. But no bugs. I didn't really care for bugs.
Okay, thank you.
Woof!
I didn't know if you wanted it after each question.
Rita.
Whoa, Jake broke our stair.
And we have to start over.
Okay.
Rita.
Yeah.
Do you ever eat sandwiches on pita bread?
I love sandwiches on pita bread.
Right?
Yes, I do. I sometimes fluctuate between a pita pocket where you put the sandwich on the... I don't know why I'm gesturing like this. Nobody can see. I'm making terrible hand gestures with this.
Is that a pita
pocket? It's a pita pocket where I put the sandwich on the inside.
That's good. It's thin, though.
Yeah, that's what bothers me then, because then it's two pieces of paper around my sandwich.
What is your ideal sandwich?
Oh, wow. Great question.
Yep.
Jesus.
It is a it is a grilled cheese sandwich with avocado, thinly sliced red onion, a tomato slice, not grilled to the tomato slice because I don't want hot tomatoes. So you have to add that tomato slice after the sandwich has been grilled, and then some cracked sea salt on top when it comes off the grill.
That's a cheese for panties.
Yep. I'm a sharp white cheddar. Mm. Yep. Maybe comboed with another type of cheese, but at least that one.
So pretentious. Wow.
A grilled cheese sandwich.
That is the most amazing grilled cheese sandwich I've ever heard.
Really
of.
Good. Try it.
Are we done with this what? Segment?
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, my neck.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Martin.
Joe's turn.
Joe.
Me.
The baby is not yours.
What?
That was a Maury.
Oh.
Speaking of Maury,
mm-hmm.
What is the most dysfunctional part of your family?
The most, oh boy.
I got sandwich and you got that.
I know, right? That's an easy one. Well, right now, it's that the two kids will not stop saying tootie butt.
Oh, no. I know why. It's funny.
It's amazing.
Isn't it? It's not. It's not, because we'll look them directly in the eye and say, stop saying tootie butt. And then both of them will look at each other and then look back at us and say, tootie butt. And it drives Teresa and I mad. It drives us crazy because they are doing it just to upset us. Nothing more than to upset us. On the flip side of that, Emily, who's the younger one, who's two, has taken to trying to say gluteus maximus, but she says booteus maximus, and that's kind of a
that's adorable.
But yes, tootie butt right now is the most dysfunctional.
Where did they come up?
I have no idea.
Like,
I have no idea. And
it,
we haven't gotten into that. We're trying to squelch the tootie butt. But I have some spies. I'm trying to figure out where this is originating from. If it's coming from the daycare center, if it's coming from the kindergarten, because obviously tootie butt it came from somewhere. Some other kid said tootie butt.
You're trying to track it down.
Like a virus, it was brought home and it's.
You do call people that though when you're yelling at them.
What?
So, do you guys
I do. I was like, get out of my lane, tootie butt. Is that it?
Mike.
Ring.
Quack it up, son.
They're fueling their missiles.
Mike, what are your three favorite novelty songs?
Oh my God!
I'm getting harder. Novelty songs.
That's great for a sandwich.
I don't know. I don't know if this is a novelty song, but it used to play all during pre-show at the Brave New Workshop for like 7 straight seasons.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And it was just like, it's just a song. It was like, it's like a soul song. It was like, Jimmy Carter says yes. Oh. Jimmy Carter says yes. And it's not, but it, I think it was like a campaign song of some kind. And I love it. And I can't, but it's not what you're asking. but that's as close as I'll be able to get.
One.
I don't know. There's a couple Weird Al songs that are funny.
Yes,
and I think that this might anger Joe Bozick a little bit, but they as a band, they have several songs that I really, really like. But for the most part, I would say that They Might Be Giants is all novelty songs. And I don't think that that is all that great. I'm not saying all of them. There are several songs.
I am with you on that.
But I think a lot of it is just like, sometimes I hear it and I'm like, really? Okay. All right. That's all I got.
Joe is really mad.
Joe's penis has burst into flames.
Do you mean to say, sir, you are a tootie bot? How dare you?
I'm with you, Joe.
I am. Wow. I think the fun noise between this transition is just going to be the sound of friendship breaking.
What does that sound like?
Meet James Asser, Belgium's famous painter. Pick him up and shake his hand.
That's fine. That's fine.
I
it
love
is.
That song.
There are lots of great They Might Be Giants.
No, you can't.
Songs.
You said it.
No, no. But I also said there are lots of songs that I like. But there, a lot of them are just like, okay, here is a ruler. I like rulers. And everybody loses their
That's
fucking
mind. That's a B-side.
Getting mean.
Man, I wish I had never formed and made popular They Might Be Giants. Now it seems like it's...
Aaron.
Oh, yeah, we have to make eye contact, don't we? He's just staring me down, you guys.
Thank you.
This is too mean. I'm gonna ask it. What are you most ashamed of?
Yes. Wow.
Oh, no.
Yes.
She's ramping up.
Oh my god. Good luck, Roan.
I'm gonna answer it seriously.
That was fart inspired, I'll point out. Because farts, some people are ashamed of them.
Well, you know, I'm not ashamed of farts. At all.
If you were, this would be an easy answer.
There was there's something that I've since apologized for, but I held on to for a really long time. Where I played baseball for 3 years,
really?
In my youth. Yeah, and the last year I got bumped up to the majors. I was 12.
Shit,
and I got and there was an angel in it. No, I got bumped up to the majors, which was like 14 and 15 year olds. It was like, it was way too much for me. I was little and I was 12, and my dad supported me, went to every game, was a huge fan, etc., etc. And there was one time that I was up at bat. Well, the reason I said how little I was because there was such an age gap and everything, I was like, not skill-wise, I wasn't close to these guys. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't the size of a small man. But there was one kid that I remember I got up to, he was pitching against me, and I knew that I could, like, hit this ball far, more than most, because most of the kids they had pitching against me were just, like, terrifying me that I was just gonna get beamed with a ball. At one point, he threw the ball, and I went, you know, I didn't hit, but I went like I was gonna hit, and the ball grazed the side of my left hand just slightly, barely, and the ump didn't catch it, and I knew, like, if he saw it, I would have been walked, and I was like, no, I can get this hit, and, you know, there were, like, 3 people on base, and there was gonna be a moment, and my dad lost his shit and just started going, ump, the ball hit him! The ball hit him! What are you doing? Look out! And my dad basically ranted on the ump for like a solid minute. And then the ump said, I didn't see it. Did it hit you? And everybody turned towards me. And I said, no. And I sold out my dad. And then I hit the ball. And we got the runs. We were already going to win the game anyway. And I felt horrible about it for years. And then later, like, as a young adult, I went up to my dad and I said, I'm sorry about that. I still hold on to it. And he went like, well, yeah. And I still to this day don't know if he really remembers, but was just letting me feel bad about it.
Jesus.
For so long.
I think what you did was better that you hit.
I just wanted to hit. It was the fact that like he went so hard in yelling at that.
Right.
He was just humiliated after it. Like it was such a public display of rage that I still feel really bad about that. That one sticks with me. And farting wise, when I was in driver's ed once, I fell asleep and I swear I farted myself awake. But no one's gonna tell you did that? And I kind of looked around and I thought people were maybe stifling laughter. And I wanted to ask, but I didn't know those people. So I'll never know. I'm not ashamed of that, though. Just curious. Did I?
Good job.
Yeah. Thanks. Good luck, James Rome.
Oh, boy.
James. Mm-hmm. Rocket ship. What was your favorite toy as a child?
What? What?
Jesus. The dagger with which I used to kill my father. No, I just wanted to... I was looking forward to a high-stakes question, so... let's see, my favorite toy as a child. I remember. My birthday is on December 28th, and so Christmas and my birthday were always kind of wrapped up into one event. My parents really tried to keep them separate, but it's hard to do that. And so I would just get beyond excited. Like it would be really fun because I'd get, I'd wake up on Christmas morning, we'd open stuff. And then after that was over with, where everybody else was sort of, I think, experiencing like post-Christmas, depression, mm-hmm. I was like, just a couple more days for me. So I'm excited. It happens all over again. It's just me this time. But I remember there was one.
Grew up in the 50s.
Yeah. There was one gift. Me. Yeah. There's one gift I got that I feel like had a lasting impact on me, and I'll talk about that in a second. So it was amazing. It really was amazing. It was not a name brand thing. I never saw a commercial for it, and I never heard anybody else ever talk about it, but it was like a ship, like a spaceship, and you could open it up, and there were all these different hued people inside of it. So there would be yellow people, and red people, and blue people, and white people, and they were color coded for the terrain that they were best suited for. So like the yellow guys were your sort of terrestrial guys, and they had vehicles that they could ride around on land. And the blue guys were like aqua guys, and they had like underwater vests, and they all went inside the same spaceship. So like the spaceship would land, you'd open the spaceship and you could take out all these other dudes. You could organize it. It was so fun. I loved it so much. And I loved it so much that from that point onward, I kind of got it. I always woke up early in the morning anyway, because I like to come down and play on our cassette deck computer because I'm older. And so every morning when I got up that early, I would check for presents regardless of what day of the year it was. Because I was just like, maybe something's been left. You never know. You know what I mean? I always had this like anticipatory feeling of like, oh, I love the presents perhaps. So that was my favorite toy.
Awooga.
They're fueling their missiles.
Well, thank you guys so much. That has been the Zany Morning Show. That is Phillip's Corner.
Yay! And are you guys ready to do some improv?
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. Next up,
Pats! I've brought your clock. I brought the clock that you ordered.
It's about time. Thank you.
That's very funny. These things...
It's about time.
These things take a while.
Pa, did you deliver the clock yet?
I am delivering
it's
it.
It's just I'm really worried we're going to get a ticket. We're double parked. Hey.
Aren't you going to deliver it into the house and set it up for me? A grandfather clock can't be left on the stoop.
Pa, I'm not even sure if the car is supposed to be running like this.
Georgie, just sit on the hood like I told you. Sit on the hood. They won't bother you.
I don't like how the vibrating feels on my bottom.
Sweetie, did the clock come yet? Sweetie, is the clock here?
Trying to get it in, but this tooty butt will not wheel it into the house.
I will bring it in. I will bring your clock in. Just point to where it needs to go.
This way.
Hey, kid, why are you sitting on that hood?
I'm just waiting for my dad. I got papers.
This isn't a parking spot. You do know that?
Yeah, you want us to steal you, kid?
No, listen, I'm just...
It seems like you're asking for us to steal you.
Listen, we steal kids all the time.
Listen, sirs, my father's delivering a clock. If you could just give me some time to... I'm sure he'll be back in just a few moments. Please don't steal
delivering
me.
A clock? That's not a real job.
What do you mean? It's what my father does for a living.
Does he fix the clocks or just deliver
them? Well, he just delivers them. I mean, look at the back seat. It's filled with clocks of various different varieties. Cuckoo, standard, modern.
I'm not buying it, kid. You should probably find another dad.
I don't think you can do that.
We can show you how.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
We've got all the documents.
What is that book you have? The thick-bound book with
the
key.
Look at the title. Lock. What does it say? Say it with me.
Okay.
I'll say it too.
Wait a minute. Hey, are you guys saying the title of a book?
That's right.
Spade. Mind if I join in?
Go on, say it.
Is there a title being said?
Hey, right over here. We're about to read this book title.
I'm not sure I can hold it up high enough that everyone can see it.
Go on. You got short arms. Holy shit.
My mother was a T-Rex.
Is that true?
Nope.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I thought it was true.
It's legend now. No. I just go with it.
I can read it on my own. All right.
And a one. And a two.
Fathers,
you
could have
fathers you could have.
That's a lot of fathers. All right, I'll see you guys later.
Another hand trying to sleep.
Listen, it's a lost cause. I don't even have a key for this.
Check your pocket.
What? How did you...
I had Randall do it when we were talking.
That's right. I put a key in your pocket.
I don't feel good about that. Listen, I don't...
Too late. You already stuck it in and opened it while we were talking. I had Randall do that.
That's right.
I don't like the way you guys are handling me.
We'll give you freedom soon enough. You've earned it.
Okay, I'm just going to skip past the introduction. I never read these. Well, it's just a bunch of names and professions and...
That's right.
Baseball statistics?
Whole new life and stats.
Well, what are the... Oh, this guy's batting average is really good.
He could be your dad.
We could take you to him.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, in the house, the clock delivery is not going as expected.
Not there, there!
You keep saying not there, there, but you keep pointing at the same spot.
Wheel it this way.
Okay,
Not there. There!
Into the laundry room, please.
Excuse me, I'm happened by a window, and I just... That shouldn't go there. That should go there.
You keep your nose out of it, Wilson.
I'm sorry, I gotta go back to my house now.
Look, all I'm saying is that usually when I deliver these, they go against a wall in, like, a family room, not in the middle of a laundry room.
Please hurry up, because it's about to strike noon, and we want this clock set.
Okay. Here?
No, not there.
Here.
There.
Here?
There.
I didn't move it.
Excuse me.
Refrigerator delivery.
No.
11:57 refrigerator delivery.
Come in this way.
Sounds good.
He's strong.
What do you want there?
Bathroom.
Got it.
Upstairs bathroom. The upstairs bathroom.
I'm going.
Uncle Lucas, hang on a second. Do you want me to just keep the electronic bicycle running outside of the curb?
That's right. Sit on the front tire. They won't give you a ticket if you're sitting on the front tire.
I don't like the way the front tire nestles between my buttocks.
Listen to me, Lucas. You gotta do this for me, okay? Come on, kid.
Not there!
For crying out loud.
Not there!
So here, this is good.
That'll do.
This is
ding,
good.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, 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 ding.
Charles, I think someone's at the
ding,
door.
No, this ding, is your clock.
Ding,
ding.
Ding.
It's majestic.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding dong.
It is
ding,
new. Dong.
That's your doorbell.
It is new.
Ding.
In there, your doorbell did ring.
Ding.
Ding-dong!
Ding! That's... So now you're hearing two dings.
Ding.
One is the clock.
Ding-dong!
Open the damn door!
Okay. Ding!
Hello?
Hey, listen, my Uncle Lucas is in there.
Ding!
I just want to let you guys know, is there a clock delivery person
ding.
In there?
I deliver clocks.
Do you have a son?
Yes, I do.
Not anymore.
What?
He's selected a new father.
Ding!
I know, because I've experienced this exact thing before.
Ding!
You see, if you leave your son outside for too long,
ding.
He'll be offered a key-locked book.
No.
Ding!
And that book is filled with better fathers than you.
Better than me? But I control time.
Meanwhile, where the sun went to...
Listen, new dad, I really appreciate this, but I can't help but feel that I'm too small to play against the major leaguers.
You can do it.
Dad, who's this kid that doesn't believe in baseball? Why is he at our house?
He's our new son. He will be very good soon. Don't you worry.
But he's so small.
Everybody's small at the start, but then you grow up and get the big...
Dad, why are you crying?
I see how big you've gotten, and it makes me cry, and I see how small he is, and it makes me cry. It's all gonna be good.
It smells like soup.
That's because I cooked the best soup tonight. Do you want me to set you a place?
Well, no, I'm not... I didn't want my mother replaced. I just wanted to replace my dad.
I understand how that feels. But you know, sometimes things don't go the way you totally want them to.
This mom makes real good soup.
It's real good soup.
Stop trying to seduce me with your soup.
It's bisque.
And if you want to grow up to be a real strong man...
She'll put a heavy cream dollop on top.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good?
Yeah, on a bisque.
Hey, I got you something.
What is it?
It's a mitt. A baseball mitt.
Wow.
The first thing you do is eat your soup out of it.
It's true.
And then when the pot of soup is empty, we put your mitt in there, and we cook it in the oven, and it makes it real soft.
Listen, I had high hopes. You have a tremendous batting average, and I had hoped to apprentice you in your horseshoe making, but I'm having second thoughts. Listen, can you take me back to my real dad?
Dad, I feel like he's mocking your career.
I don't know if he's mocking it or if he's just a little bit confused. That's all, okay?
I feel like nobody's ever turned down my soup before.
That is very frustrating.
This is an affront.
Okay. Uh-oh, the door is being knocked on.
Wait, I know that sound.
I'll get it.
Oh,
Dad, it's a horse.
Hold on.
It's shoeless.
Do you need to help a horse? Do you need a horseshoe? New son, old son, I want you to come downstairs to meet the basement. I'll show you why my profession is noble.
No, I'm getting out.
You're
slipping
going
out through
in.
The door.
You're
no,
going
I'm
going.
Going. Bye.
In.
He's gone. He's a runaway. All right, horse.
Meanwhile, back where the clock and refrigerator were and are.
Not there. No, there. Not there. I want to be able to get stuff while I'm on the toilet.
I get it. Why won't you let me leave?
Because you didn't put the clock in the right place.
It's
yet.
You were fine with it. You were fine with
it's
it.
Not there.
I'll get it.
It's the clock.
Honey, I think the
ding dong.
Right.
That's the doorbell.
Ding dong.
Sweetie, I'll get the door.
I'll get the clock.
Hello? Hello? There's no one at the door.
I'm at the door. Look down. Look down. It's
Both
me.
Both of us are down here.
We're mice.
Mice? Sweetie, the mice
Shh,
are here.
Shh, quiet.
Do you think we chose you at random?
I'm not going to be quiet, man.
The reason why we're here is because we've selected you as being mouse sympathetic.
That's right.
Are those mice?
The mice are here.
Tell them to come in.
We've been waiting for this day ever since we put our names in that mouse directory.
We got this new clock for you.
Yeah,
time
a mouse
to run up it.
Wait, no, this is not a mouse. This is not a mouse clock.
That is just a
rhyme. That is not a documentary.
That's the only reason we bought this clock.
I worked hard on this.
I
built this clock with my own two hands.
Would you guys settle this, please?
Please, we don't know whether to come in, if this is a trap or a friendly offer.
Come in. We got the clock so that they could keep me company while I did laundry.
I would not have built this clock for you if I knew that it was going to be a mouse clock.
Whoa, what's your problem, man?
Because mice do not appreciate fine craftsmanship. You're going to eat a hole in it, and then it's going to have a hole.
Can I just ask you a question here?
Yeah.
How many mouse cartoons have you seen? Because it seems like you've seen all of them.
I have seen a lot of mouse cartoons.
Yeah. The number one source of stereotypes about mice.
It's really offensive.
Are you saying it's not true that you're going to eat through this and make a little mouse hole?
I wish we'd evolved past this point.
Sir, you're in a mouse-inclusive house. We're in a directory.
Well,
if you must know, we prefer grilled cheese, white cheddar, with thinly sliced onions, tomatoes that aren't grilled at the same time.
Well, you don't want a hot tomato.
No, nobody wants a hot tomato.
Hey, guys, I'm sorry I'm late but I was busy eating through a clock before I got here.
What?
God damn it.
Come on, Hector.
What?
Meanwhile, out where that kid has a bicycle tire in his butt.
Ugh. Hey, kid.
Yeah?
Why are you sitting with that tire in your butt?
Leave me alone. I've been through this before.
Are you trying to say that kid has a tire in his butt?
Everybody come look at the kid with the tire.
Hey, what's going on?
Leave me alone.
That feel good? Is that intentional?
Let me ask you this. Do you want another tire in your butt?
Oh, give him a chance, Christopher!
I don't know if anybody's butt's that big.
I'm serious, do you? Or is this uncomfortable for you to have one?
No, I don't want a second.
Okay.
Why you got one in your butt?
I'm waiting for my uncle.
How come that guy just offered to put another tire in a kid's butt and we're all just okay with it?
Yeah, this is weird.
You guys don't know Sean?
Sean, come on.
I'm just trying to make sure that someone's got something comfortable happening with them, I can increase that comfortability.
That makes me uncomfortable.
And if it's uncomfortable, then I want to remove that.
Makes sense to me. These are tough economic times. We all have to kind of create our own careers, you know?
Have any of you had two tires in your butt? Maybe it feels great.
Hey, guy, you have to be okay with the fact that when he said no, he was fine with it.
That's true.
All right.
But I mean, it's not like Sean's forcing another tire up that
boy's
butt.
No, I just have a follow-up for Sean.
Yeah?
Can you say that you are a comfort engineer?
Well, I do have this business card that says so. It's made out of cotton.
Don't get it wet.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'd love to hear about your most successful comfort engineering anecdote.
Earlier this morning,
I'm gonna go. This is boring. I'll see you guys later.
Earlier this morning, I saw a little girl with a balloon.
God, it's really tight in my butt.
I forgot my keys.
Jigga, 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 jigga.
I said,
see you guys later.
Did you finish
little girl,
have some of your snow cone?
Absolutely, here you go.
Thank you.
Would you like a second balloon? She said, yes.
That's my problem. You got balloons, and they're all these little kids. Makes me uncomfortable.
It seems to me like you just offer anybody a second one of what they already have.
Yeah. It's usually
kids. There's no creativity in that.
Are you doing it?
I got a cupcake.
Are you doing it?
How are you going to make me feel more comfortable?
Would you like me to make you a second cupcake?
That's what we're talking about.
Meanwhile, where the kid from the house, the first kid from the house after the baseball house went to...
Christ, I don't know how to do this. I've just got my thumb out. I don't know if anybody's going to stop.
Hi, I was just walking by. I know it won't help much. I don't have a car.
Sorry, I was like, I'm gonna get you over the truck.
I just noticed you had your thumb out.
Skateboard.
It's really dangerous. Skateboard. There's so much traffic on this road.
Excuse me, can I just... I've ridden it. You don't have to say skateboard when you go down the street on one. It's just...
Holy shit, it's Tony Hawk.
Skateboard. Oh, maybe you do.
He just goes back and forth doing that all the time.
Get on the road!
Listen, I'm trying to get back to my real dad. I abandoned him.
Why did you abandon him?
Well, I was offered what I thought was a better prospect.
Hey, everybody, look, it's a parade coming.
Oh, that explains
right it. Down the middle of this interstate.
So dangerous because it's a really someone dies every year in this parade.
What?
I don't know why they don't close down
the
intersection.
Get off to the side of the street. You're going to get trampled by this motherfucking parade.
Here comes that semi again right through the brass band.
Oh, God.
Sorry you had to see that.
Oh, Jesus. Look at that poor man's sousaphone.
My leg.
Meanwhile, back at the clock store.
Where is our delivery man?
I don't know. Are you supposed to be back 14 hours ago?
He certainly does take his time.
Go.
Hey, you guys got clocks?
We got clocks.
Do we have clocks?
Come on.
Yeah, he's looking for a clock.
Well, what clock suits you need?
Yeah, I don't know. We've just been dating for a couple of weeks. What kind of clock is good for that?
Oh.
A clock for a special lady.
I don't know how special she is. Don't push me into that shit.
Well, is she... shut the door, would you? Now, is she a digital kind of clock, or a...
How do you know things like this?
Is she into craftsman-y sort of things?
What kinds of questions do you ask on dates?
Oh, we have a clock that will rattle your bones.
Go on.
It's in the back room. Follow
You might be interested in this sort of
roller coasters.
Some of the dust off.
Oh my god, you got a crow in here!
Raven, actually.
It's a nice clock. I don't see what's so bone rattling about it. It's big, it's dusty, there's a crow.
Oh, just look a little closer.
So,
okay.
Would you like to have this clock?
Well, I don't know. I mean, is it a.
It keeps good time.
Is that. Early music?
Yes.
It's hypnotic.
Isn't it, though? Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the bathroom with the refrigerator in it...
Not there.
I really need to leave. I need more. I have more deliveries.
I gotta go, too. I'm worried about my nephew.
Not there.
Okay. It's on wheels. You can do whatever you want with this. It's fine. Okay.
All right.
You all right?
I'm dying.
You guys can go. I don't want this on my hands. Get out of my house.
I don't want the happening in our bathroom.
I will
Charles,
carry.
Get this dying man out of our bathroom.
I'll give this letter to my nephew. Just please.
Ding, ding, ooh. Ding,
I'll take it.
Someone's at the door, I think.
But no, that's the clock. Ding. I will deliver this letter if you will only let me leave.
Go ahead. Let's let him go. Let's let him go. I gotta use the bathroom.
Have a good afternoon. Boy, are you the nephew?
Yeah. Hey,
wait, you're a nephew? Yeah. We've just been calling him Tire Butt.
Listen, yeah.
Are you comfortable?
I'm my Uncle Lucas's nephew. I am not comfortable, especially now that I have a second one of these fucking things in my butt.
Are you saying there are two tires up your butt?
Leave me alone. Sean did it before he left. You guys made him mad, and he felt like he had to do something.
I have a letter for you.
Yeah, a letter?
It's from your uncle.
Hey, for you...
Well, why would he give me a... He's just in there.
He's dead. Your uncle is dead. It's...
How did it happen?
Well, he just got really tired from moving the refrigerator a lot, and I think he might have had a disease.
Oh, God.
Maybe we should get Sean back to put a third tire in.
No,
here,
I don't want
to. This seems like a third tire situation.
Get out of the way.
You guys just leave me alone for a second. Oh, Jesus. There is so much blood on everybody's uniform.
This parade is smaller than it was before. The whole brass section is missing.
Has anyone seen my son?
Dad?
Your hair.
I walked with the swing band after the carnage. Listen, I'm so sorry.
Hey, what are you guys talking about?
I abandoned my dad, and...
Is this your dad right here?
And it's my dad, and I chose another dad out of a book.
Am I interrupting? I'll go.
Why'd you do it, boy? Why'd you do it?
I told you I didn't like the feeling of the...
I forgot Wilson guy. Something. Excuse me, please. Just gonna get, it's your feet. Can you move your feet?
I didn't realize I was stepping
out. Gobble gobble.
I forgot my.
Gobble gobble.
It's a turkey.
Gobble gobble.
Can you? It's a microscopic turkey. Gobble
yeah.
Gobble. Foot.
That's what I do.
Gobble gobble.
Sean's does gobble, things, gobble. And I do other things.
So
for
your job is you're a microscopic chicken farmer.
Gobble, well, gobble. And turkeys.
Wow, that's an admirable career. What's your batting average?
Oh, do you like that?
Here's my, well, 400.
Do you like that, son?
Oh, I'm doing it again.
Is this another dad you would prefer to have over
I'm
me?
I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm always shopping.
I
time.
Can't
commit to one father.
I control time.
I'm gonna go. Here's my card for both of you. Go on, take it.
Thank you. Made out of thank feathers. You.
It's feathers and hot glue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hug. All
you
right.
Say a hug.
Hug.
No.
Okay, I'm gonna go then. Bye.
I'd really like you to reunite now. This was Randall's and my plan the whole time.
What? Really?
When you read to the end of the book, it says reunited father choices, and that's where you just pick the one you originally had.
That's right.
So this whole thing was just a way to get me to recommit to my father?
What do you say, boy?
I... So sorry. I had milk for the first time. I'm not handling it well.
You're a real tootie butt.
Tootie butt.
Next up, Pat!
And that's our show. Thank you to The Mess. Thank you to Joe Bozek, Eric Noble, Mike Fotis, Rita Borsma, Jake Scott, and James Rohn, and in absentia, Michael Ritchie, whose penis is burning.
Are you saying that
his penis is on fire?
Fire?
Thank you to all of them for coming on over. That was a lot of fun and very illuminating into their process and where they're at right now. Because it really does seem like a process for them that they're still moving towards, which is really cool to see with all of the years of improv experience in that group, which is many. We didn't actually talk about that, but it is many, many, many years of experience between the seven of them.
Right.
They're not content with where they're at. They're constantly striving towards where they want to go. And incidentally, that first show that I saw, they could have kept doing that. It was genius. They want to keep moving towards something bigger and better. So you can see The Mess up through the end of April at 9:30 p.m. at Huge Theater. That's Huge Theater at 31st and Lindale in Uptown Minneapolis. The Saturday night shows have sold out every single one for the past half year.
Wow.
So make sure that you get your tickets in advance. That's how good these guys are and the shows around them. Also, be sure to check out their website, which is facebook.com/TheMessImprov, and be sure to check out their cover photo, which Philip and I were just admiring.
It is our new favorite thing.
It is our new favorite goddamn thing. It's amazing. Check it out.
You can also see me and my team, the local music scene.
That's right.
At our regular Saturday morning show, 11 to 12:30 at Even Break Gallery. There'll be a new musical guest every week, but we will be there improvising based on their music.
That's right, and that's been getting some really good buzz, so you guys should get over and check that out. You can also see me, not really at all for the time being, but I'm coaching a bit. I'm coaching some youth, and otherwise I'm going to be directing, along with Joe Halverson, a show coming up in the somewhat near future called The Improvisers. And doing some other coaching. But otherwise, I'm kind of taking it easy right now.
Keep in touch with us at our new website, nextatbatpodcast.com, our Facebook page, facebook.com/nextatbat, and send us an email, nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. You might be the first. So that would be lovely.
Someone has to be.
Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. Rate it and review. Give us 5 stars. Thanks so much for listening. You guys are the backbone of Next At Bat. And as always,
praise Jaibosh.